And at about 26 minutes after the hour, we turn our eyes eastward to Ashburn, Virginia. Pastor Robbie Pruitt is joining us. He's an Anglican pastor and executive director at Preserving Bible Times and an awfully good friend of the station. Well, we have another topic in mind today, and it involves Matthew 21. I'll just make this a riddle. Matthew 21, Isaiah 5, and Psalm 80. What is the common thread there?
I love that you've got worked in there the Psalm and Isaiah 5, because what we're talking about is the readings for this coming Sunday. If you're following the lectionary, or if your listeners are following the lectionary, Isaiah 5, 1 through 7 is paired nicely like a good wine and cheese with Matthew 21, 33 through 44. Oh,
that's very clever wine, Robbie. Mm-hmm. Good that you could work that in.
Well, we're Anglican, so it's not grape juice for us.
But I mean, we're talking vineyards here, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't even, wasn't even paying attention to what I just did there.
Well, I'm gonna make a note of that. Just a second here. Okay.
Yeah, right. Wine, vineyard. My church is on the same calendar, so.
Oh, so yeah, good.
We'll be having the same passages on Sunday.
Well, really, I mean, Isaiah is the key to understanding Jesus' words in Matthew 21. I mean, I'm looking at my cultural background study Bible. It's a New King James Version. And these letters are in red when Jesus begins to tell this parable. And we've been tracking along. I mean, we were at the workers in the vineyard in Matthew 20 a couple of weeks ago, and then we've been at the parable of the two sons that were asked by their father to work in the vineyard last week, and then this week we're looking at the parable of the wicked vine dressers. So here another parable Jesus says, there was a certain landowner who planted a vineyard and set a hedge around it and dug a wine press in it and built a tower. So I love the context just in this first verse. Basically, you get a word picture of a vineyard. Well, you got to have a tower. You got to have a watchtower in your vineyard to watch for, you know, the animals that might come steal your crop around harvest time.
Do you think Jesus borrowed this? I mean, this is structurally much like Isaiah, who also mentions the elements of a vineyard.
Absolutely. And we quoted Deuteronomy, where God promised the Israelites that you will inherit vineyards that you did not plant. And this is the infrastructure. What's the benefit of vineyards that you did not plant? It's all of this. It's the wine press is already dug. The walls have already been built. The terraces have already been structured, and the tower's there, and everything's in order. And so you see this in, say, Joshua 24:13, I gave you a land on which you had not labored, and cities which you had not built. You dwell in them, you eat the fruit of vineyards and olive orchards that you did not plant. This is Joshua. This is one of the 12 spies that came back with the clusters of grapes to say, we've found this abundant land. And so Joshua, in his book, is quoting God, who has given us this promised land. And the reason this is such a valuable piece of real estate is not only that it's the crossroads of the nations, but it's already has been inhabited, and all of this infrastructure is in place. And so this echoes Deuteronomy from the last book of Moses, the last speech of Moses, where it says, and when the Lord your God brings you into the land that he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, with the great and good cities, again, that you did not build, and houses full of good things that you did not fill, cisterns that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees that you did not plant. And when you eat and are full, and this is Deuteronomy 6, 10 through 11. So these are infrastructure passages, and it gives us insight into what it takes to build a vineyard. And again, Jesus is quoting this, you're right from Isaiah 5, 1 through 7.
There's no doubt that they knew what a vineyard was, but it seems to me, and I looked ahead, Robbie. Read Isaiah and Psalm 80. Here, the vineyard is symbolic of something else.
Say more.
Israel. It's Israel, yes, as a vineyard, which means something to be cherished, something of value, something that people enjoy, rest in, find pleasure in, find value in. This allegory of a vineyard. Well, Isaiah is what, 8th century BC. The Psalm would go back even farther to David's time. So vineyards have been with these people for a long time, and
absolutely,
and also in each case, it's an object lesson from Isaiah and from David and from Jesus. In this case, I think he had probably maybe both those passages firmly in mind when he told this parable. And this is a parable, not a historic event.
This is what the first thing that Noah did when he when the ship landed, he planted a vineyard.
Yeah, I mean, that's what enabled him to get drunk and naked. I mean, mm-hmm, remember that? Mm-hmm. They don't put that on the flannel graph with Sunday school teachers these days.
No,
you know,
they don't. What's wrong with these people? Come on.
But a lot of people are surprised to hear this. I used to drop that on my Bible classes all the time. Like, you know what happened to Noah after this? And no one really follows the story afterwards.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But, you know, to which the joke goes, if I was cooped up in a boat with my family and a bunch of animals for 40 days, I wouldn't get drunk.
And he took Ham to task for that, didn't he?
Yeah.
Pronounced a curse, really, is what he did.
Yeah. So vineyards, I mean, it's as early as Eden because you've got a lush garden, and certainly the vineyard, the vine is cultivated.
I have read for the word, the Hebrew word for wine is the same word they use for happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see the linkage there between vineyards and Israel from time immemorial.
Yeah, it's joy. I mean, it's with wine that you celebrate joyous occasions. It brings new light to Jesus's first miracle in Cana of Galilee, where he's making wine from water. And I love this because a lot of people miss the miracle. They think the miracle is simply that Jesus turns water into wine. But it's actually that Jesus takes water and turns it into old wine. He does a new thing that's actually an old thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so don't stop with the water becoming wine, because that's only the first part of the miracle. The second part is it's aged wine. It's the best wine. And that piece of the miracle is important because that's the message. God has saved the best for last.
Yeah, the wedding at Cana is rife with context. I don't know if we've done that with you, Robbie.
We have. We've tread upon those grapes. And we've done that. Sorry, you got me on a roll.
We've crushed those grapes, haven't we? Yeah.
Okay. I told you I wasn't right today.
No, I know.
Well, if you look at these things, I mean, if you just look at the vineyard all the way, you know, from the first wedding in Eden, and the first be fruitful and multiply, the cultivation of the garden, which includes vineyards and vines. You can trace it again through Deuteronomy. This is the promise of the promised land. We just traced it through Joshua. We see it with the spies being sent out in Numbers and coming back with the grapes. Well,
the centrality of this whole topic is reflected by Jesus when he refers to himself as the vine.
Yeah. Israel is to be a fruitful vine. Jesus says, I am the vine, you are the branches. If a person remains, because he's the true Israel. Jesus is the true Israel. And so we are to be a fruitful branch grafted into the true vine. He's the true vine. That's what he's saying in John's gospel. And that's important. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remain in me and I in him, he'll bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. And this is what we're going to begin to talk about today. The purpose of a vineyard, I mean, that's a lot of work. It's not for nothing. It's to produce fruit. And if you've got a vineyard that's not producing fruit, you've got a lot of work and a lot of trouble for not a lot of return, and that won't fly unless you're in government work.
And for those of you who are picturing Napa, Sonoma, and Mendocino counties in California, and even the grapes in North Carolina and Texas, the vineyards, it's not the same in the Near East. Different kinds of vineyards and under much different growing conditions. Now, most of the vineyards, would they not, have been in northern Israel, not in Judah?
Yeah, it's Judea. There, it's on the mountain range, actually. I mean, it's on the ridge line. It's not in on the coastal plain.
So kind of between Jerusalem and Galilee, then.
Yeah, yeah. So along this ridge line in the hill country and the mountainous region, it's not on the in the coastal plain, not in the Shephelah. And we talked about the Philistines being beer drinkers. So where you live and what you're growing affects what you're drinking. And that becomes important. But yeah, this Psalm 80 is a psalm of Asaph. It's a very old psalm. And it talks about the deep root in the land. It talks about, in verse 8, you have brought a vine out of Egypt. You have cast out the nations and planted it. You prepared a room for it and caused it to take deep root. And it filled the land. The hills were covered with its shadow and the mighty cedars with its boughs. So you see this lush vineyard. And yes, Israel is the vine. And you trace this even into Isaiah, and it really gets, I mean, almost verbatim what Jesus says about this infrastructure of the vineyard in Isaiah 5, starting at verse, let's look at 5:1. Let me sing for my beloved, my love song concerning his vineyard. Whose vineyard? His vineyard. My beloved had a vineyard on a very fertile hill. And again, there's that image of the mountain region, the hill country. He dug it and cleared it of stones. And again, that's the infrastructure. You're actually building, you have to build terraces into the sides of the hills and the mountains. And he planted it with choice vines, not any vine, but choice vines. He built a watchtower in the midst of it. And he hewed out a wine vat. This is out of this would have been out of solid limestone, and you can still see wine presses dug into the bedrock of the limestone throughout all of Israel. And he looked for it to yield grapes, but it yielded wild grapes. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge between me and my vineyard. Now, that's the key verse, by the way.
Now, the way I see this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the voice of God, in essence, coming through the prophet. And he's talking about the vineyard being Israel, the land itself, and everything he gave to them. Then he addresses the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the men of Judah, and asks, where did I go wrong that it produces wild grapes rather than the cultured grapes? So he's taking Israel to task in this.
Yeah, and who's to blame? I mean, the vineyard owner has done everything right. And that's why the last sentence, or the last half of the sentence in Isaiah 5:3 is so important. He says, judge between me and my vineyard. So in other words, who's to blame here? Is it the vineyard owner, or is it the vineyard itself, the vines planted in the vineyard? Judge between me and my vineyard. So this is an ancient prophecy. I mean, this is 66 chapters in Isaiah. It's one of the most quoted. Deuteronomy and the Psalms, and then Isaiah are some of the most quoted Old Testament books in all of the scriptures.
Well, and Isaiah was kind of the preeminent number one prophet. I mean, I don't know how you order them, but he has a whole lot of material in the Old Testament, and the Hebrews, the Jews looked up to him as an example, as I guess the preeminent prophet. Is that not right?
Exactly. The major prophets: Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentation, Ezekiel, and Daniel. And so Isaiah has got the most prophecies concerning the Messiah, and is probably one of the most quoted prophets. Certainly, it's one of the most quoted Old Testament books in all of the Bible. So Isaiah comes first, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel, in that order. Mm. Before the minor prophets, there's five major prophets. Then comes 12 minor prophets. So verse 4, what more was there to do for my vineyard that I have not already done in it? In other words, I did everything. The vineyard owner is saying, I did my job. And when I looked for it to yield grapes, why did it yield wild grapes? In other words, why didn't it produce the healthy, vibrant fruit that it was supposed to do? So there's only so much that the vineyard owner has control over, and then the vine has to do its job and to reflect the character of the vine.
Now, we should probably also bring some history into this, because this would have been written at about the time the Assyrians conquered the northern kingdom and fought in Judah as well, but failed to take Jerusalem. So because the remainder of Isaiah 5 explains that God is going to basically wash his hands of that vineyard.
Yeah.
He's talking about invasion here, is he not?
Yeah, absolutely. So why? Because of idolatry. So the north was conquered in 722 by the Assyrians, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Babylon, sorry, having a brain fog there. Babylon was 586, and that was Jerusalem. And so, yeah, Assyrians in 722.
That's Isaiah's time. He must have been seeing that.
Yeah, so this is the prophecy. And now I'll tell you what I want to do to my vineyard. I will remove its hedge. I'll remove the hedge of protection. This is where we get the cliche Christian prayer you always hear. Lord, please provide a hedge of protection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that cliche, you know, I don't want a hedge of protection. I want a wall. I don't know why people. But the reason that's being prayed is because of this, you know, that I will remove it, the vineyard's hedge. I will remove its protective barrier, and it shall be devoured. I will break down its wall. There it is. That's what I want, a wall. And it shall be trampled down. In other words, the vineyard's going to be trampled down. I will make it a wasteland, and it shall not be pruned or hoed, and briars and thorns shall grow up. Now you get a little bit of the parable of the soils here, don't you, when mm-hmm. you start to read something like that? And I will also command the clouds that they rain no more upon it. And for the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is, and this is an example of the Bible giving you its context in its text in verse 7. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel and the men of Judah, and his pleasant planting, and he looked for justice, but behold, there was bloodshed. He looked for righteousness, but behold, an outcry. And this is how our text ends, and it sets us up perfectly for the parable of the wicked tenants.
Well, let's go into that now. Jesus is in Jerusalem. This is Holy Week. He's just arrived. We've had what we call Palm Sunday, and he spent the next couple of days teaching in the temple. And so that explains why there are Pharisees all around, and he's addressing them pretty directly in this parable, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see this in verse 33. He says, hear another parable. Why? Because he's been giving them layers of parabolic truth to follow up the question, by what authority do you do these things? I mean, this is the question of the religious leaders. Who are you? Where did you come from? And by what authority are you doing this?
He's invading their territory now.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jesus is increasingly telling very poignant and relevant story, like parables. And a parable is when you take one truth and throw it along another truth to present a spiritual reality or truth. So when he says, hear another parable, he's told them this same parable in two or three other ways. I mean, we talked about two of them. Last week, the parable of the two sons. And then the week before, the parable of the laborers in the vineyard. And now he's going to tell this parable. And you know, the ESV, again, has a title heading that says Parable of the Tenants. But I like, if we're going to put a title on this, I would call it the parable of the wicked tenants. He says, hear another parable. There was a master of the house who planted the vineyard, put a fence around it, dug a wine press, and built a tower. So there's Isaiah 5, right? And there is Deuteronomy, this land that you will inherit that's already been cultivated. Already the infrastructure is there. He leases it to a tenant, to tenants, plural, and went into another country. So this is a landowner who is wealthy and builds the infrastructure and does everything. And then this landowner has the right to up to 50% of all the fruit in that vineyard. That doesn't mean he's going to take 50%, but he has the rights to up to half. Of
these are typically the tenant farmers, so they get part of the crop, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But the vineyard owner, I mean, we've got to pay rent here. I mean, if you're a tenant in the vineyard, you owe the vineyard owner rent because he's got the capital investment into the infrastructure. If he's built it, it's his land. You've got to pay the vineyard owner what is his due. And so when the season for fruit drew near, he sent his servants to the tenant to get to the tenants to get his fruit. Whose fruit? His fruit. It doesn't say that the vineyard owner is coming to take something that's not his. That's important for us to look at this in verse 34, this specific clarity that he's coming for his fruit. Not your fruit. A lot of times we think that God's going to somehow leave us high and dry and doesn't have our best interest in mind or doesn't want to provide for us. And so we want to take what's ours and be covetous and gather up. But here it's clear that this landowner is just and he's just coming for what's his. And the tenants took his servants and beat one and killed the other and stoned the other. By the way, this is exactly what the people have done to the prophets of old. Mm. Even Jeremiah, I mean, beating him and throwing him into a cistern. All of these different images of what they did to the prophets. Again, he sent other servants, more than the first, and they did the same to them. Finally, he sent his son to them, saying, they'll certainly respect my son. But when the tenants saw the son, they said to themselves, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him, and we'll have his inheritance. It's like squatter's rights. If we're the ones that are here in the vineyard and the owner dies, well, possession is the law, right? So they're hoping to kill the heir. They think the father is dead, that he sent his, that the son has come to claim his inheritance. And if they kill the son, they can have the vineyard.
And probably it's good to emphasize that a father-son relationship in that culture was a little different than what we see here in the West. The son was the absolute representation of his father. It's almost as if they were one. With authority, yeah. I mean, and rights, the birthrights and so forth. So, yeah, the special relationship between father and son is emphasized here.
And the son is beholden unto the father to do his deeds. And they are assuming that this wealthy landowner has sent servants and servants and servants. And they have beat and killed and thrown out and stoned all these servants. And so when they see the son, they believe that the reason the son has come, because if they've killed all the servants, no father in his right mind is going to send his son into this dangerous situation. So when the son shows up, they assume the father is dead. And that's important here because the father's not dead. And the son does come, and they took the son, they threw him out of the vineyard, and they killed him. And when therefore the owner of the vineyard comes, the father, the owner of the vineyard, what will he do to the tenants? This is Jesus's question to the religious leaders. And they said to him, he will put those wretched and miserable to death. and let out the vineyard to other tenants who will give him the fruits in their season. Jesus said, have you never read in the scriptures the stone that the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone? And this is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore, I tell you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people producing its fruits. And the one who falls on this stone will be broken into pieces. When it falls on anyone, it will crush him. What's the purpose? It's the gospel. Jesus is foretelling that God is sending his son to be beaten, killed, crucified, so that the Father will give his vineyard, his promised land, the true vineyard, the true promised land, to true tenants who will give the master his fruit in good season.
In so many words, he's saying to the Pharisees, you shall be replaced.
Right.
And chills
right.
ran down their spines.
For fruitful tenants.
Remember, they're after him this week. He's in their territory, and this is days before the crucifixion. So it's a tense time. And the Pharisees were not stupid. They knew what was going on here, and they were about to take action to change things. It didn't work. Pastor Robbie is the Executive Director of Preserving Bible Times. I want to mention that website to you, preservingbibletimes.org. Lots of new product there. There's streamable videos, ebooks, audiobooks, and a lot of those books and audiobooks now available on Amazon as well. Just search for Doug Greenwald as the author. You'll find a lot of materials there. And they've got some special prices going on the audiobooks. So take a look. And then pay a visit to preservingbibletimes.org. Sign up for the newsletter, the Between the Lines newsletter. And Robbie, you just let one of those go, didn't you? Just let one fly the other day.
Yesterday, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Announcing the two audiobooks.
Mm-hmm.
Your listeners may even hear a familiar voice there.
Well, it could be. Could be,
possibly.
The newsletter arrives in your email. It's free. You can sign up for free at preservingbibletimes.org. Robbie, have a terrific week. We appreciate what you brought to us today. We're better off. We learned something. Have a good one.
Joy and a privilege to be with you, Jim and David. Thanks so much for having me on The Broken Road.